If you'd like to go ahead and turn to the 37th Psalm, the seventh verse of that psalm is going to be our focus this evening. We'll note a few other verses and end up reading the entire psalm at the conclusion. I'd like to read verses 7 and 34, which are both very similar. Verse 7, 37 verse 7, rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Verse 34, wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. Hunters wait for the kill. Pregnant women wait 9 months for the birth. Husbands wait on their wives while they shop. Kids who've been bad wait on their dad to get home. At least that's the way it was when I was home. Teenagers can hardly wait till they drive. Somebody estimates that we spend 45 to 62 minutes waiting on something every single day. That includes waiting for the light to turn green, waiting at the drive-thru, waiting for a cashier, waiting for the nurse to say it's time to come and see the doctor, waiting for the mechanic to fix your car, waiting on the barber, the beautician to finish your hair or to finish the person in front of you, waiting for the kids to finish practice, and the list goes on. Waiting can cause stress. There are obviously different kinds of stress. Stress caused by the prosperity of the wicked. Stress caused by need, by inadequacy. Stress caused by life's momentary satisfactions. Stress caused by the difficulties of living the Christian life. But there's another kind of stress, and that's the stress caused by the struggle of the unexplainable things in life. There are many things in life that we cannot explain. Some of those things we feel the acute need to at least try to explain. Why do bad things happen to good people? Why do tornadoes happen? Why do floods, wildfires, hurricanes, tsunamis, earthquakes, school shootings? And interestingly enough, being a Christian can make this worse. How could a good and loving God allow such things to happen? We sometimes tend to blame God or argue with God over certain things. You see examples of that in the Bible. Adam in Genesis chapter 3, verses 11 and 12, after Adam and Eve both ate the fruit of the tree of knowledge of good and evil, the Lord comes walking in the garden, and there's a discussion that ensues. He says to Adam, "Who told you that you were naked? Have you eaten from the tree of which I commanded you that you should not eat?" Adam said in Genesis 3:12, "The woman whom you gave to be with me, she gave me of the tree and I ate it. Lord, if you hadn't given me this woman, everything would be fine. The blame lays at your feet." In Genesis chapter 42, you recall Joseph was sold in Egypt. His brothers had made a trip down there. They come back, minus one of the brothers. And Jacob is clearly upset about this, and the brothers inform him that now when they return after this, they're going to have to take their youngest brother Benjamin with them as well. It says, as they emptied their sacks, verse 36, that surprisingly each man's bundle of money was in his sack, and when they and their father saw the bundles of money, they were afraid. That's verse 35. Verse 36 says, and Jacob their father said to them, "You have bereaved me. Joseph is no more." He doesn't know what happened to him, but who's he going to blame? Is he blaming them? He's blaming somebody. "Simeon is no more. Now you want to take Benjamin. All these things are against me." He doesn't say, "You're against me," but "all these things are against me. Whatever's happening, everything's falling in." You recall Elijah in 1 Kings chapter 19 and verse 4. In that whole section there, the confrontation on Mount Carmel, then Jezebel putting a hit out on Elijah, him fleeing for his life. We're told that he goes a day's journey into the wilderness in 1 Kings 19:4, and he came and sat down under a broom tree, and he prayed to God that he might die. And he said, "It is enough. Now, Lord, take my life, for I am no better than my father's." Jonah, being sent to Nineveh, he goes there, he preaches to the people. He finally comes to realize that God is not going to destroy them as he hoped that he would. God says to Jonah after this, "Is it right for you to be angry about the plant that God had caused to rise up and the worm that ate it?" Jonah said, "It is right for me to be angry even to death." I'm afraid we all, perhaps, and I'll speak for myself, but there are others that seem to be along for the ride, as we've just indicated. Maybe we're too quick to accuse God, to look at God as somehow being responsible for the things that are going wrong in our lives. Too quick to place blame. Such arguments are strong stress producers, not stress reducers. They are strong stress producers. They can resolve nothing. They can never provide any peace. They cannot even reduce stress, because you can never accomplish any of these by casting blame at the innocent. You cannot win an argument with God. You cannot blame God and walk away unscathed. People have a lot of ideas about how to reduce stress. Yoga, Tai Chi, meditation, hiking, exercise in general. These may provide momentary stress relief, but the psalmist and the entire Bible knows nothing of those remedies in meeting man's real needs. Verse 1, I'm just going to pick up a few verses and just portions of some of those verses in the 37th Psalm. Verse 1 begins, "Do not fret because of evildoers. Do not be envious of the workers of iniquity." Verse 3 beginning, "Trust in the Lord and do good." Verse 4, "Delight yourself also in the Lord." Verse 5, "Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him." Verse 7, "Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass." Verse 7 again, "Rest in the Lord." This rest in the Lord speaks of a particular kind of rest. The word actually carries the idea of being dumb or silent. Some translations render this, "be still." The rest of silence. Ceasing from words of self-defense or words of accusation. The idea that is that we'll not speak to vindicate ourselves, we'll not speak to justify ourselves, we'll not speak to accuse God, but we will trust in him to protect us. The next portion of it says to wait patiently for him. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. He's telling us that we can wait patiently instead of fretting, instead of fearing that God has forgotten us, or fearing that God intends us evil. Perhaps it's a difficult requirement, this resting and waiting thing. Someone has said the hardest thing for a Christian to ever do is nothing. And the second hardest thing is to wait. And I understand they're not just talking about Christians who live their lives in general. They're talking about in situations of dire circumstances, when there are problems, when you're anticipating an outcome, to absolutely do nothing. Just stand still and wait. It's difficult when you cannot see any progress, when you can't see what's going on behind the scenes, and things seem to be falling apart down here. Joseph had no clue what God was up to behind the scenes, letting his brothers sell him into slavery. How could this possibly be for my good? Who could possibly benefit from this? God had told Abraham long time previous to this, Joseph's great-grandfather, God had told Abraham that his descendants would be slaves in a foreign land for 400 years in Genesis chapter 15. Joseph had no way of knowing that's what God was bringing about by letting him be sold as a slave down there. It's like watching someone weaving a tapestry or a needlepoint, but you're watching from the backside. Everything's all straggled and messed up looking, and you see these mixture of colors, and there's no real order to it. But then when they're finished and they turn it over and you see the product, and it's a whole different story. If the Israelites had had GPS when they left Egypt, they would have been complaining a lot sooner. Well, we're supposed to be going northeast, not southeast. What should have taken them something like 10 days, around 2 weeks, to just get to the entrance of Canaan, ended up taking them over a year. Of course, we know they didn't enter for another long time, 39-ish years. Why? They had no clue. They had no clue what God was up to. Just give us the land. That's what we left for, right? Came out here to sacrifice on the way and then receive the land when we get there, right? I mean, let's get on with this thing. God had something bigger in mind than just giving this group of people a piece of land of their own. God was intent on making them a people of his own. They didn't understand that. God is still working today. There will be times when you feel the world is crashing in around you, times when it seems there's no hope of getting through this in a way that will be less than heartrending, and it may end up being heartrending. But that may just mean that we're given an opportunity to graduate to a new level. Mary and Martha's sense of loss over Lazarus' death, they had no clue what the Lord had in mind. When it was all over, I can only imagine how their faith was strengthened, how they were convinced more firmly of what lay ahead. We need to try to appreciate the benefits that come from trials. We're familiar with the passage, James chapter 1, verses 2 through 4. My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience. Let patience have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. Without the trials, there would be no growth. We need to remember Job. The little passage there in James chapter 5, verse 11. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. Say that again. Indeed, we count them blessed who endure. You've heard of the perseverance of Job and seen the end intended by the Lord, that the Lord is very compassionate and merciful. We talk about the benefits of trials. We talk about the benefits of enduring. But sometimes that knowledge, that information just goes right out the window in the midst of trials and difficulties. Pulitzer Prize winning cartoonist Jules Pfeiffer once created a strip depicting a man walking down a road. He came to an intersection. There's right, there's left. He sees a wise man sitting at the junction. And the traveler asks the wise man, which is the way to success? Wise man points to the right. Doesn't say a word, just points to the right. Guy rushes off in this direction. Suddenly there's a loud splat. A few minutes later, the man returns to the sage, to the wise man sitting there. He's stunned, he's staggering. He thinking maybe the guru misunderstood something, so he asks him again, which way to success? Sage never says a word. He just points to the right again. Guy takes off down the road again, disappears from sight, then an ear-splitting splat. When the man returns, he's crawling. His clothes are tattered. He's bleeding. He's quite upset. He approaches the wise man. He said, I ask you which is the way to success, and all you did is point. This time I want you to say something. Tell me straight up which way to success. The guru finally breaks his silence, and he calmly replies, success is that way, just a little past splat. Never question in the dark what God gave in the light. Because of the darkness, because you're struggling, don't draw the conclusion that God has abandoned you. Somebody has said, don't criticize the drama if you leave before it's completed. Verse 7, the second portion of it says, do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. The psalmist brings in a specific example of what he means here. He says, don't get upset over something that's hard to understand. Other translations are the New International Version, which says, do not fret when people succeed in their ways, when they carry out their wicked schemes. The Contemporary English Version says, don't let it bother you when all goes well for those who do sinful things. New Living Translation renders it, don't worry about evil people who prosper or fret, who prosper, and don't fret about their wicked schemes. What's the reason for him using this example? Well, it's actually the theme of this psalm. Verses 1 and 9, I'll just read. Do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity. Verse 9, evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. It's sprinkled throughout. Plus, it's common to our experience. Can anyone here not relate to that? When we're faced with the inexplicable, with the unexplainable, we need to, first of all, bring it before the Lord. Bring it before the Lord. And we may do that. We may bring it before the Lord. But we sometimes take it with us when we close the prayer and walk away. So when we bring it to the Lord, when we bring it before the Lord, we need to leave it before the Lord. And then we may sometimes leave it before the Lord, but we're still anxious about it. We may not let ourselves dwell on it. We say, well, I've left that with the Lord. But we're still uncertain, or we're still wary, or we're still concerned about how it's going to work out. It's a natural thing, but we need to learn to bring it before the Lord, leave it before the Lord, and leave it up to the Lord. This is when we've truly learned to trust. And it can help if we realize that God has a plan for every situation. Jeremiah 29, verse 11 says, for I know the plans I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not to harm you. Plans to give you hope and a future. We need to realize that God knows what he's doing. We need to realize that God's timing of necessity is perfect. If things are not left with him, and if things are not left up to him, more stress will be created. We need to learn to stop saying, I've got this. Just stand down. If I need you, I'll call. That's the recipe for great disaster. But we must not get the wrong idea about the word wait and waiting. Biblical waiting is not passively waiting around for something or someone to come along that will allow you to escape from your trouble. Some people say, I'm just waiting on the Lord, and they use that as an excuse for not facing up to reality. not meeting up to their responsibilities, not taking any kind of appropriate action. Waiting on the Lord is a confident, disciplined, expectant, active reliance on God. Waiting on the Lord is the continual daily decision to say, God, I will trust you. I will obey you even though the circumstances of my life are not turning out the way that I want them to, even though they may never turn out the way that I want them to. I'll keep doing the best I know to do, but I'm trusting in you fully. There is no plan B. That's waiting on the Lord. Waiting on the Lord requires trust. You think of trapeze artists and the very special relationship between them, the flyer and the catcher. Flyer is the one that lets go. The catcher is the one that catches. You can imagine how important this relationship is, especially to the flyer. Catcher's fine regardless of what happens. But the flyer's out there and he releases and then he's waiting to be caught. And that's what's happening. He's waiting. He's waiting and he's trusting. But he's doing more than that. He must maintain his position. He must maintain his posture. It takes a lot of discipline to just hang there in the air and let what's going to happen happen. But he doesn't just kind of cross his legs and cross his arms and say, okay, do your thing. I'm going to catch you. There's something required of him in the process. Warren Wiersbe once said, the ability to calm your soul and wait before God is one of the most difficult things in the Christian life. Our old nature is restless. The world around us is frantically in a hurry. But a restless heart usually leads to a reckless life. Things we cannot understand and things we cannot control create stress. We must understand, we must remember that there's more of the love of God in our defeats than there is in the successes of the wicked. Most of us would rather do anything than wait. Of course, we've learned how to wait graciously, haven't we? We pull out our cell phones and we never wait anymore. In the full sense of the word, I suppose. But in our hurry-up-and-wait society, we rush to the doctor's office only to wait for 30 minutes or an hour to see the doctor. We hurry up to work only to get stuck in traffic, and we sit and wait and we wait. But we're told that good things come to those who wait. This is especially true regarding those who wait on God. Lamentations chapter 3, verses 25 and 26 says, the Lord is good to those who hope in him. To the one who seeks him, it is good to wait quietly for the salvation of the Lord. Sometimes we need to wait because we need to know that we're not as smart as we think we are. Sometimes we need to wait because we need to know that we're not the ones in charge. Sometimes we need to wait because we need to know that maybe we don't know what's best. And sometimes it's because maybe we haven't learned the lesson. I'd like to read the entire 37th Psalm, and I say that in that way because there are 40 verses. Beginning in verse 1, do not fret because of evildoers, nor be envious of the workers of iniquity, for they shall soon be cut down like grass and wither as the green herb. Trust in the Lord and do good. Dwell in the land and feed on his faithfulness. Delight yourself also in the Lord, and he shall give you the desires of your heart. Commit your way to the Lord. Trust also in him, and he shall bring it to pass. He shall bring forth your righteousness as the light, and your justice as the noonday. Rest in the Lord and wait patiently for him. Do not fret because of him who prospers in his way, because of the man who brings wicked schemes to pass. Cease from anger and forsake wrath. Do not fret it only causes harm. For evildoers shall be cut off, but those who wait on the Lord, they shall inherit the earth. For yet a little while, and the wicked shall be no more. Indeed, you will look diligently for his place, but it shall be no more. But the meek shall inherit the earth and shall delight themselves in the abundance of peace. The wicked plots against the just and gnashes at him with his teeth. The Lord laughs at him, for he sees that his day is coming. The wicked have drawn the sword and have bent their bow to cast down the poor and needy, to slay those who are of upright conduct. Their sword shall enter their own heart, and their bows shall be broken. A little that a righteous man has is better than the riches of many wicked. For the arms of the wicked shall be broken, but the Lord upholds the righteous. The Lord knows the days of the upright, and their inheritance shall be forever. They shall not be ashamed in the evil time, and in the days of famine they shall be satisfied. But the wicked shall perish, and the enemies of the Lord, like the splendor of the meadows, shall vanish. Into smoke they shall vanish away. The wicked borrows and does not repay, but the righteous shows mercy and gives. For those who are blessed by him shall inherit the earth, but those who are cursed by him shall be cut off. The steps of a good man are ordered by the Lord, and he delights in his way. Though he fall, he shall not be utterly cast down, for the Lord upholds him with his hand. I have been young and now am old, yet I have not seen the righteous forsaken, nor his descendants begging bread. He is ever merciful and lends, and his descendants are blessed. Depart from evil and do good, and dwell forevermore. For the Lord loves justice and does not forsake his saints. They are preserved forever, but the descendants of the wicked shall be cut off. The righteous shall inherit the land and dwell in it forever. The mouth of the righteous speaks wisdom, and his tongue talks of justice. The law of his God is in his heart. None of his steps shall slide. The wicked watches the righteous and seeks to slay him. The Lord will not leave him in his hand, nor condemn him when he is judged. Wait on the Lord and keep his way, and he shall exalt you to inherit the land. When the wicked are cut off, you shall see it. I have seen the wicked in great power and spreading himself like a native green tree, yet he passed away, and behold, he was no more. Indeed, I sought him, but he could not be found. Mark the blameless man and observe the upright, for the future of that man is peace. But the transgressors shall be destroyed together. The future of the wicked shall be cut off. But the salvation of the righteous is from the Lord. He is their strength in the time of trouble. And the Lord shall help them and deliver them. He shall deliver them from the wicked and save them, because they trust in him.